Welcome to the People's Pharmacy. I'm Joe Graydon.
And I'm Terry Graydon. If you've ever had to go to an emergency room or a hospital, you know these can be scary places. Most large healthcare facilities are organized for the convenience of the staff, not the comfort of the patients. If patients were empowered to design their own hospitals, what would they look like?
Dr. Pamela Weibel is a board-certified physician and nationally recognized innovator in patient-centered care. She pioneered the community-designed ideal medical practice in which patients design their own clinics. She practices in Eugene, Oregon.
Dr. Weibel, I wonder if you would tell us briefly how you went from being a young doctor in a typical medical practice to being a doctor who's the head of your own community-designed clinic.
Well, I was trained in family and community medicine to care not only for the physical health of an individual, but the social, emotional, spiritual, and cultural well-being of the patient, family, and really the entire community. And that, as you might imagine, is impossible in a 10-minute visit. You know, the way healthcare is practiced today, it's always felt more like a competitive sport.
A rush.
Right. Who can see the most patients per day? Who has the biggest, fanciest hospitals? So, you know, at 35, I was just miserable in that setting, and so I quit, crawled into bed, and surrendered. And then 6 weeks later, I had an epiphany that came to me in the form of a dream. Hundreds of people were gathering in churches and community centers. Doctors, preachers, grandmothers holding grandchildren, and they seemed to be building their own clinics and hospitals. And for me at the time, it seemed very prophetic. It was like a glimpse into healthcare 5 to 10 years down the road. And it was almost like a call to action. I think in Catholicism, they would consider this a moment of discernment, you know, a divine calling for your life's purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was pretty amazing. It jolted me out of my depression, that's for sure.
And you acted on it.
I did. I literally jumped out of bed. Having been in bed 6 weeks, I jumped out of bed, contacted the paper, and led 9 town hall meetings in the following 6 weeks, challenging citizens to design the clinic of their dreams. And from that, I collected 100 pages of written testimony, adopted 90%, and 1 month later, we were open. And their dream was really simple. Primarily, it was humanizing healthcare and incorporating integrative medicine. So, you know, they want happy doctors and leisurely visits, a cozy office, more like a living room, yoga, massage, flannel gowns, door prizes, house calls, all of that stuff. And it was a pleasure to deliver that. So that's what I'm doing now.
In Eugene, Oregon.
In Eugene, Oregon. That's right.
Something very odd happened when you were talking to us on the radio last summer. And that's the... You know, the magic of radio is that people get to listen to it wherever they are. In this particular case, it was a CEO of a hospital system. A gentleman by the name of Bob Krause heard our interview with you, and he, and actually the CEO of that hospital system, contacted you, and you went to Wisconsin. Tell us what happened.
Well, actually, Bob Krause is the board chair of that hospital, and which is in Wisconsin, and the CEO is also in Wisconsin. And what happened is, interestingly enough, you know, this guy's driving down the road listening to your radio show and gets quite inspired. So I end up getting a message from Steve Ronstrom, which is, he's the CEO of this Wisconsin hospital system called the Hospital Sisters Health System, which involves 13 hospitals, and he's the CEO for the Western Wisconsin division of 2 hospitals out of that 13. And so basically he calls me and they want to know if I'd consider coming out to do a speaking event for a few hours. So I'm obviously intrigued and I Google this guy to find out more, and I'd certainly take him up on it after learning a little bit more about him.
And what happened?
Well, I think first it's important to know that I felt a connection with Steve Ronstrom after reading a little bit about him. He he's a very spiritually evolved person. I'm not used to meeting a lot of CEOs who are very spiritually accessible, and I think it's because, you know, from what I read when I was researching him, you know, his son died at age 8 from a brain tumor, and I think if that doesn't kill you, if you survive that one, you pretty much, you know, are more spiritually aware, I think, than the rest of us. And so I felt like this is a man who's actually ready to do something important and really ready to transform what a hospital is. So on the phone with him, when I called him, we talked for an hour, and I pretty much told him, you know, my opinion. I thought it was time that we allow communities to design their own hospitals, you know, time for a movement. And he paused, and he actually really liked, he said, the sound of that word, movement. He said that's exactly what they're looking for. So we agreed on 2 days on site, 1 to 2 community welcome addresses, and 6 smaller visioning panels. And we called the entire event Dream Your Hospital. And so I was there 3 months later, actually 3 months after the People's Pharmacy aired, I was in Wisconsin leading this event.
What kinds of things are people in Eau Claire, Wisconsin dreaming about for their hospital?
I think that the themes are very similar to what people in Eugene and actually probably anywhere in the country would say. You know, the top thing is humanizing healthcare, again, including massage therapists, you know, integrating all these healing modalities and, you know, acupuncture, all of that. And I just, it was very beautiful what they actually said in these ballroom luncheons, these visioning sessions that I led. You know, they wanted buildings that were, you know, energetically sound, every nail pounded with love, waterfalls, warm floors, essential oils, you know, a place where you feel close, where you feel like you're home with your family. You know, your family is welcomed. And, you know, it's really a spiritual, emotional comfort that people are looking for where, you know, as one man put it, life and death are embraced with grace. And fears are addressed. So, you know, beyond just the technology and the actual, you know, antibiotics and all of that that you would receive in a hospital, people really need and are longing for that emotional and spiritual component.
Dr. Weibel, there was a meeting that you held with some folks of an Amish background. As I understand it, these were gentlemen who looked a little foreboding when you probably entered the room. Can you tell us about your interaction with them, what that was like?
Well, it was really interesting because with all the other groups with whom I met, you know, I was able to organize that with the hospital, you know, online. But with the Amish, I was writing letters back and forth before I arrived. And they told us they'd like to meet at the, there's a conference room on the 3rd floor of Unity Bank in Augusta, Wisconsin. And so Steve and I and then 2 members of his staff, we actually went there and 3rd floor, opened the door to the conference room, and it just looked empty, like a big empty conference room. And then we flipped on the lights to discover 12 equally spaced bearded Amish men in matching black work boots, navy blue pants, shirts, and zip-up jackets. And they were seated from eldest to youngest in a slight semicircle, wearing their little straw hats. It was a very intriguing sort of scene. And so, you know, I went, me, of course, at the time I had just led a session, you know, in my little skirt and my, you know, blouse and my high heels and all of that. And I hadn't even thought about maybe what to wear when you meet the Amish, but they still, you know, were welcoming to me all the same. But I introduced myself and asked them, you know, what their dreams were for ideal care. And that question sometimes throws people off. They're really not accustomed to a doctor or anyone asking them, you know, what their dreams are and actually trying to bring them to fruition. And so they were sort of stunned. They didn't say anything. Actually, they didn't say much for about a half an hour. We were there 2 hours. And, you know, I just kept trying to pull them out of their shell, I guess. And so I asked them, well, you know, what can we do to make you more comfortable in the hospital? And there was just dead silence. And finally, an elder assured me that, you know, we're comfortable now. So, you know, I kept asking questions about their culture, their views on disease, on death, and again, no response. So finally, I just, you know, I basically got a little frisky and I said, you know, let me tell you about me. You know, I'm a family doctor in Oregon. I got tired of, you know, pushing people through. So I held a town hall meeting and asked people what they want. And you know what they want? They want to go back to the 1950s. When you could walk to the doctor's office right in your neighborhood. And as soon as I said that, all these Amish men smiled the same little smile in unison. So I kept talking. It was obviously working. And the next minute, they're all laughing. And then they did finally open up to me. And what they shared was very beautiful. And, you know, the primary concern they had was really about finances. Eventually, they shared their herbal medicines and all sorts of traditional healing modalities that they use. But, you know, their focus was, you know, they just wanted to explain that to pay their hospital bills, they go door to door in their community and collect money. And then hospitals end up still writing off their debt, which, you know, because they really can't collect the amount of money that hospital bills are these days. And it offends them. You know, because they're proud people and they really want to feel like they can pay their bills. And so finally, Steve, you know, claims with health care reform they're going to be covered by insurance, and then they relay to us that to have health insurance means one doesn't trust in God. And so what they're really asking us for is a fair bill.
You're listening to Dr. Pamela Weibel talking about communities designing their own dream hospitals.
We need to take a short break. When we come back, we'll find out what happens when school children are invited to have a say in their dream hospital. We'll also learn how this movement is catching on in other places and how hospitals might incorporate joy into their vision.
You're listening to The People's Pharmacy with Joe and Terry Graydon.
Welcome back to The People's Pharmacy. I'm Joe Graydon.
And I'm Terry Graydon. The People's Pharmacy is brought to you in part by Reddix Industries, makers of Utter Cream, Utterly Smooth Hand and Body Lotion, and Utterly Smooth Extra Care Cream enriched with urea. They're aids for dry, cracked skin. 800-345-7339. Online at uttercream.com.
And by CarDrug, providing pharmacy and related healthcare services in more than 90 locations throughout North Carolina, including pharmacists in every store providing advice on medicines, health screenings, and immunizations. CarDrug for a healthy relationship. Online at kerrdrug.com.
If you would like to order a CD of this show or any other People's Pharmacy broadcast, the number is 800-732-2334. This is show number 818. That number again, 800-732-2334. You can also find it on our website. It's peoplespharmacy.com.
Today on the People's Pharmacy, we're talking about dream hospitals. How can communities design the health care they want? Our guest is Dr. Pamela Weibel, a nationally recognized innovator in patient-centered care. We were just talking with her about the wish that the Amish men expressed that they would like to be billed fairly.
Well, is there any prospect at all of the billing being altered to address their concerns?
Yeah, they're actually working on that as we speak. They're working on possibly a bartering scenario with them and on a variety of discounts that are beyond what they've actually delivered in the past to groups such as this.
I understand by the end of the meeting, they wanted you to be their doctor.
Oh, they were basically jumping up and down. I mean, when I left, I said goodbye, of course, got up and shook their hands, thanked them for the opportunity to speak with them, and it was just adorable. They all looked like these little puppies. They were like, well, are you moving to Eau Claire, to Wisconsin, to be our doctor? And I said, no, I'm going back to Oregon. And the next one asked me again, you're not moving here to be our doctor? And when we were leaving, Steve said, you know, they were basically ready to buy me a buggy and build me a house and have me move into their neighborhood. So it was adorable. Really.
Just shows how strong those dreams can be.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And how important it is to really connect with people at the heart.
Yes. Now, you met with another few groups, and one in particular I want to ask you about. You met with some school children. What was it like to meet with the kindergartners?
Well, they were really beautiful, and I told the kindergartners and the fourth graders, and they really ate this up. You know, I said, out of the entire country, we picked your class to be in charge of designing your own hospital. The CEO wants to put you in charge, and they just couldn't get over it, especially the, you know, the fourth graders. They were like, out of the whole country, you picked us? And so their eyes were really wide, and you know, the kindergartners had a little bit more trouble grasping, you know, kind of how cool this was, but they all really gave it 100% effort. I mean, they sat there, they all drew pictures, they wanted pink fluffy chairs, they wanted a mural on the side of the building of people having fun. You know, I couldn't believe how many people said they wanted aquariums in there all over the place, like a glass floor with fish swimming by and, you know, zoo animals. A lot of them wanted rooms full of pets or, you know, pictures of zoo animals on the walls. And so, you know, a pink polka dots. It was really fun. I would love to work in a hospital like that myself.
Well, I think pink polka dots might definitely be doable in a pediatric ward, don't you?
Oh, I do. And I think some adults might love it, too. lighten up their mood.
So this is really radical, a revolution, or, to use your words, a movement, in the sense that here is a CEO of a hospital and a hospital organization that's listening, actively seeking input from a wide diversity of people in the community, kindergartners, fourth graders, the Amish, and other people, just to find out what they want in terms of that hospital. What are some of the big picture ideas that came out of it for you, besides the polka dots and the aquarium?
I think, you know, like I had mentioned before, a bartering system, that would be really beautiful. A lot of people who were not Amish, right, who wanted to actually provide community service in to repay a portion of their hospital debt, maybe to work in the hospital doing non-doctoring types of things, cleaning the dishes. I mean, a number of people ask, could I just show up and clean dishes? Can I do janitorial? Can I do anything? You know, so there's a willingness in the community to really support a hospital that supports them and doesn't bankrupt them and, you know, take their house. And so the other things, you know, healthy food, you know, modeling healthy behavior. I mean, this hospital is just decades ahead of other hospitals in their use. They're already using local foods from neighborhood farms in their cafeteria. And so also exercising. People like the idea of having a gym attached to the hospital where nurses actually, as part of their shift, would be paid, you know, it would be paid time, 30 minutes or so before their shift, to exercise, get their blood moving, kind of like in China. Several people brought that up in China, where people in the morning are gathering in parks and doing Tai Chi and this sort of thing, so patients and staff could gather together and exercise. And essentially turning a hospital into more of a community wellness center.
Well, that's a really interesting idea, and we'll have to see how they work it out as they go forward in their implementation. Are there other places in the country that are joining your movement?
Well, there's certainly other doctors around the country that are doing this. There's a map on my website, which is idealmedicalcare.org. If you click on Dream Clinics, there's a map with 200 doctors all around the country that are doing similar sorts of things, you know, getting back to this relationship-based care versus production line type service. you know, Dr. Amy Solomon actually spent a weekend in front of Johnny's supermarket in Boulder Creek, California, surveying citizens about how to better serve them. And 6 months later, she leaves her corporate medicine job and opens the town's dream clinic, complete with a massage therapist, life coach, yoga teacher, and she just brought in a shaman. And then we've got, this Dr. Bob Forrester in Modesto, California. He leaves a lucrative practice, and his whole dream is he wants to serve migrant farm workers. But it's really hard to do that because your only option is to do it in a community health center, which is kind of back to the assembly line model. He really wanted to, you know, spend quality time with them and be in a relationship-driven setting. So what he did is he led three community meetings and developed this very novel benefactor model where half the clients essentially are more financially well off, and they pay a modest yearly fee of $600 to $1,500 a year, which is, you know, very inexpensive for a year of medical services. He doesn't bill insurance. And for that money, they get unlimited office visits, house calls, and 24/7 physician access. But that fee also subsidizes half of his clinic are made up of recipients who receive unlimited primary care at no charge. So you're basically paying for your own medical care and adopting like a family. And so since 2004, the clinic's provided over $1 million in free care to the community. And these two models are, you know, just, again, in California, but there's models all around the country, all sort of unique, you know, in their own little way.
Dr. Weibel, we've been talking about dream clinics, and I'm going to ask you, what's your dream for the future? Where's the movement going?
Well, I see this as truly a bipartisan movement with the potential to heal really our political divide, our economy, because healthcare sucks down, you know, quite a large portion of the economy, and, you know, bring our country together. And so I'm sort of intrigued by the timing of social movements, how and when new ideas seep into our collective consciousness, and also the positive impact of media on social change. So I have to thank you guys for this People's Pharmacy, which catalyzed this movement, actually. And so what I see is media creating, you know, traction, building momentum, and more and more people, you know, kind of driving down these deserted little roads are going to hear about this, and they're going to say, hey, you know, maybe we can do this in our town. There's just going to be more interest in these common sense solutions, you know, that are really from the bottom up rather than waiting for a government one-size-fits-all type of system, which a lot of people have problems with that. And so my big hope really is that we don't get too serious with this and we can pick up where maybe Patch Adams left off and design a fun hospital, you know, where kids' ideas are not discarded as impractical. And you know, I personally am a pretty playful person. I love the idea of sliding down a water slide attached to the hospital and maybe boarding a little miniature train for a ride around the building. And, you know, a lot of times kids' ideas are not considered important. That's why we went out to see kindergartners, fourth graders, and eighth graders, is they happen to be a disenfranchised group. They don't often get to design hospitals or design services or even their home environment, you know. So they're sort of held hostage to what society and what their parents are giving to them. And so I love the idea of them expressing what they want. And you know what? Why not decorate rooms with these pink polka dots and build an aquarium wall and, you know, cover the hospital with a mosaic mural of people having fun? What's interesting is that Steve has asked me a number of times to help him with the concept of joy, because there's four core values in his hospital, which are care, competence, respect, and joy. And they feel like they really have a handle on the care, competence, and respect, but joy is sort of a little bit hard to wrap their heads around and figure out how to kind of make that part of the hospital culture. And I really think that kids know a whole lot about joy, and if we can let them lead and actually listen to some of their ideas, we'd have a pretty joyful hospital. So I'd really like to see this, you know, the Patch Adams movie. That hospital was never built. I'd really like to see that happen. I'd like to see somebody pick up where he left off.
Dr. Pamela Weibel, thanks so much for talking with us again on the People's Pharmacy.
And sharing your dream. It's starting to come true.
Thank you. Thanks for having me back.
You've been listening to Dr. Pamela Weibel. She's a board-certified physician and nationally recognized innovator in patient-centered care. She pioneered the community-designed ideal medical practice in which patients design their own clinics.
We turn now to Bob Krause, head of the board of directors of the Wisconsin Hospital System, that contacted Dr. Weibel.
Bob, welcome to the People's Pharmacy. We understand that you heard something interesting on the radio last summer. Would you tell us about it, please?
Sure, Terry. Well, last July, my wife and I were driving up to our tree farm in Dunn County, Wisconsin. And we always listen to public radio, primarily on Saturdays because of we have more available time, I guess. And we listened to the Menominee Station 88.3. And we listened to People's Pharmacy because it's one of our favorite shows, not only because you talk about traditional and non-traditional medicine and methods, but because of the amount of time that you're able to allocate towards these really important topics. That's so important for us, and it helps us get a deeper understanding of what the real truth is on some of these issues. We really appreciate that. But that particular day, we were listening and driving, and Dr. Weibel came on, and she was talking about something that she did up in Eugene, Oregon. And it was so enlightening because some of the things that she was talking about were so close to our hospital's needs. And we had just begun our strategic planning for a five-year plan, and we had just started it. And some of the things that she brought up, we started to kind of outline in the hospital, but weren't really sure how to address it. So the things that she said really challenged me, so much so that I stopped the car and I called our CEO, Steve Ronstrom.
Well, before you even tell us about your conversation with Steve, tell us about your hospital and what role you play there.
Okay. Well, I'm a volunteer at the hospital, and I chair their board of directors, and I'm kind of proud because I'm the first layperson that's chairing a Catholic hospital in our system. Our system is 13 hospitals in Wisconsin and Minnesota, and I'm the chairperson. We have a board of 9 people, and we are about a $300 million hospital.
So this is not a small operation. This is actually a pretty big deal. And you have seen some of the pros and cons of this hospital system pretty close up. And I guess Dr. Weibel was telling you something that you really resonated to.
Well, I did, because the things that she was talking about, even though she was operating on a smaller scale, resonated with me because we have the same needs here. And basically the needs are the people. That's what we're serving. That's what we're trying to help in their health care needs. So the things she was saying, even though she had a smaller format, really, really intrigued me. And I thought it was at least worth a follow-up call to her to see if her methodology might work within our hospital. And quite frankly, she was right. She hit a home run for us. We had over 2,800 pieces of potential improvements that we can address in our community. So from my perspective, it was just a home run.
So what did your hospital system learn from Dr. Pam Weibel?
Well, I think what they learned, and this is how I'm interpreting it, is that, yes, we can make investments in experts that can come in, and we can have consultants come in and give us metrics and tell us what direction or to go or what advice that we might need to accomplish something. But there's another element that we aren't looking at enough, and that's asking the people that we're serving. The people that we're serving know what they want, and if we can take time and listen to them and get it out, we're going to be much more successful in terms of really improving health for the people that we serve.
So what kinds of things is your board of directors working on now that they heard from the community?
Well, first of all, the entire board, we distributed all of the 2,800 potential improvements to the entire board in a format that's not really conducive for a board to look at, but we wanted the board to see the wide variety of different pieces of input, and some of them might sound more bizarre or non-traditional, but I wanted them to see it so that they could experience it firsthand. What we're working on right now is we're actually finalizing our strategic plan, and we've actually taken some of the suggestions and incorporated them into the plan. We've incorporated taking health care down to wellness centers. We're addressing in our strategic plan making the hospitals and the healthcare clinics that we have more people friendly, more kid friendly. So we're trying to address some of the basic things that we heard, and I think we're going to have even more grandiose things incorporated into our plan once it's finalized.
Bob, what are you most excited about as you look to the future?
Well, I believe that we're in a movement, and I think that we are a small piece of it, but it's so exciting to be in this movement. And the movement I'm talking about is, I think, a better awareness for everyone in terms of their own health and the management of it, and how we can help everyone that we serve to have a more healthy attitude and more control over what their health and their healthiness is. We don't just look at, you know, taking someone's appendix out or treating someone's chronic disease, but we really try to look at the whole person. And that's part of our Franciscan mission.
Bob Krause, we want to thank you so much for talking with us on the People's Pharmacy today.
Thank you very much for giving me the opportunity, and thanks for everything you and Joe do. We really appreciate it.
You've been listening to Bob Krause. He's chairman of Sacred Heart Hospital's Board of Directors in Eau Claire, Wisconsin. It's time for us to take a short break. When we come back, we'll hear from the head of the Plain Tree Hospital Network about putting patients first.
You're listening to The People's Pharmacy with Joe and Terry Graydon.
Welcome back to The People's Pharmacy. I'm Joe Graydon.
And I'm Terry Graydon. The People's Pharmacy is brought to you in part by Red X Industries, makers of Utterly Smooth Foot Cream with Shea Butter, helping dry, cracked feet feel soft and smooth. 800-345-7339. The website, uttercream.com.
And by CarDrug, providing pharmacy and related healthcare services in more than 90 locations throughout North Carolina, including pharmacists in every store, providing advice on medicines, health screenings, and immunizations. CarDrug for a healthy relationship, online at kerrdrug.com.
If you would like to order a CD of today's show or any other People's Pharmacy broadcast, you can call 800-732-2334. Today's show is number 818. That number again, 800-732-2334. Or you can place your order online at peoplespharmacy.com.
Today on The People's Pharmacy, we're talking about dream hospitals. One organization has made putting patients first its motto. We're talking with Dr. Susan Frampton. She's president of Plain Tree, which is a growing network of hospitals and healthcare centers across the United States, Canada, and Europe.
Dr. Frampton, welcome to The People's Pharmacy.
Thank you. It's really wonderful to have an opportunity to talk with you today.
I think many of our listeners may not be familiar with Plain Tree, and so I'm hoping that we can start with the creation myth, as it were. I noticed that your degree is in medical anthropology, as is mine. Would you please tell us about Angelica Tyriot and how she founded Plain Tree in 1978?
Angelica Tyriot was a young woman who had been born and raised in Argentina, moved to the San Francisco area, had married an American, and became very, very ill. She had a life-threatening fever of unknown origin. She was admitted to a large academic center, a very prestigious hospital in the San Francisco area. And she spent a little over a week in that hospital, and it was just the most horrible experience she had ever had in her life, not so much because of how sick she was, but because of the way she was treated. And it's interesting because she's always made a distinction between the clinical quality of care that she received, saying it was probably about the best you could find anywhere in the world, But that the human side of it was so terrible that she felt so much that she was treated as a number, as a piece of meat, as that person with the weird virus, or not even that person, just that strange virus or whatever is happening to her, and not as an individual with a family, with a background and a story and a life before she showed up in that hospital. And so her great desire when she came out of that experience, because she did have her symptoms resolved, and they never did establish exactly what had happened, but she came away from that experience galvanized with this mission to change healthcare in the United States, and particularly hospital care at that time, because she felt that we could do so much better if we took the best of modern Western medicine and combined it with a truly healing environment with a more human-centered way of delivering that care.
Now, Susan, she wasn't just anybody, and she was associated with a very powerful family in San Francisco.
She was, yes. Her husband was associated with one of the largest newspapers in the area, and she traveled in a circle of very influential people, and she rallied many of those people around her as she began to put together this vision for a different kind of healthcare. And this group, it was kind of this little group of very free thinkers that said, you know, what if we looked at the healthcare experience from the patient's perspective? What if we looked at everything that happened, for instance, in a hospital, as if we were the patient? What would we want to change? And she and this group of visionary thinkers developed the Plane Tree model based on some of those ideas. And she was able, although it took quite a few years, but she was eventually able to get some funding and some support from one of the large hospitals in San Francisco to try this visionary model out. And she was allowed to work with a 13-bed medical surgical unit at California Pacific Presbyterian Hospital. And they worked with the staff and with patients and family members. And they took this unit and they applied that guiding principle of what if we looked at everything from the patient's perspective. And they created this amazing healing oasis on this medical surgical unit. They looked at the physical environment, because when Angie had been hospitalized, she felt that the environment was sterile and cold and institutional. And so they put colored paint on the walls instead of the beige that you tend to find everywhere in hospitals. And they put curtains on the windows, and they put artwork that you could lose yourself in on the walls. They brought music in. They created a little patient and family library right up there on the unit in order to address the information needs that patients and their families had, because in Angie's experience, when she had been hospitalized, she was very much trying to understand what was going on, and she would ask questions and people would kind of pat her on the head and say, "Don't worry, honey, we'll take care of it," in a somewhat condescending but also disempowering way. So there was this real vision for the power of information and making it as accessible as possible to patients. So they had a little library on that unit. They had the very first open medical record policy. So they literally encouraged patients to read and understand their own medical records while they were in the hospital being treated. This was such a break with tradition, in which the medical record is treated like some sort of a classified document, and you get slapped on the wrist if, as a patient, you take a peek at that. I still have people that will recount stories today of a hospital staff member pulling a record away or saying, "What are you doing looking at that?" So they wanted to have that open access to information. They did away with the visitation hours. And again, this was a part of Angie's experience. She came from a very close-knit family. And when she was hospitalized, they had to abide by the traditional restrictive visiting hours. And she just thought, this is ridiculous. I'm ill. I'm vulnerable. This is when I most need my social support system. And they're being told they can't stay with me. And so they abolished on this medical surgical unit visitation hours. Patients could have whoever they chose to have with them whenever they chose to have them. They established a little family lounge, so that if the family did need to step out, there was a place for them. So they weren't seen as being in the way. So all these different aspects of the care experience were looked at and changed in this unit. And it was a huge success. it was studied, and there was an article that was published on the impact that it had on increasing patient satisfaction, on increasing the staff satisfaction who worked there, in improving patient compliance with treatment regimens. And so it was a real success, and many, many hospitals around the country and the world came to see this unit, to see how they were doing this, and began to adopt this philosophy. And that's where the Plaintree organization started, with, again, that one person's vision. And now we work with about 500 organizations across the U.S. and Canada, in Europe, also a hospital in Brazil and Japan have adopted the model, and it continues to grow and spread.
When was that first hospital, those first beds in that hospital created? When did that begin to get some traction?
The model unit, that first unit that I described to you, opened up in 1985.
Well, what you described back in 1985 actually still sounds pretty radical. There are a lot of hospitals that have not adopted the Plaintree model and still don't let people have easy access to their medical records and don't have music and don't have pictures on the walls that are attractive and don't make it easy for families to participate. So why don't you share for our listeners what it's like for a patient to enter a true Plaintree hospital? What is that experience like, and how does it differ from hospitals that are kind of clueless?
Well, interesting that you asked that, because I had an opportunity several months ago to be in a hospital that was partly Plaintree. So I'll describe that a little bit and then provide a contrast. My mom, unfortunately, had a stroke several months ago. It was just one of those horrifying experiences where you go to bed one night after having a lovely evening, wake up the next morning, and realize something just absolutely terrible had happened during the night. We were on vacation. We rushed her to the local hospital, which happened to have a family-centered approach to care, very Plaintree approach to care. And so from the moment that we brought her in to the emergency department and then up to the neuro floor for the 4 days that she stayed there, the physical environment was warm and welcoming. There was no question that my sisters and I would stay by her side the entire time. And when we first went up into her room in the neuro floor, it was this beautiful private room with a little window seat that we could tell would pull out into a bed, which was the signal to us that, yes, we will be allowed to sleep here. We're not going to have to fight that battle. There was artwork on the wall. There was a whiteboard for communication between the staff and patient and family, nice view out the window. It was a calming oasis for us as a family in crisis. Now, some of the things that weren't there that you would also find in a Plaintree hospital would have been for the staff to offer my mom the opportunity to view her medical record for us as her advocates, to view it as well, to see the results of tests that were being done on her while she was there in the hospital, to have a dialogue and an opportunity to ask questions of the nursing and the medical staff about what these tests meant, what was going to happen when she was discharged, what role we could play in facilitating that. But that kind of information was not available, and in most hospitals isn't available. We were not actively involved in the treatment plan and the discharge planning. It was kind of an afterthought. But in a Plaintree hospital, that's part and parcel of the experience, that family and patient they're able to view that information, be a part of that discussion and the decision-making in a much more engaged way. We would have gotten a packet of information about her stroke and how, as a family, to support her in that, customized to our particular situation, and questions would have come up from the Health Resource Center. So these are some of the things that you'd expect in a Plaintree facility. The contrast is what we see in the majority of hospitals still. And again, what I feel at this point is some hope that we are beginning to see more and more of Plaintree's concepts adopted, at least pieces of them. And that's what we found as a family in our hospital experienced several months ago. Some of the pieces were in place, but the things that aren't in place are where we still have opportunity.
So how do you, following the title of your book, put patients first? How do you design patient-centered care and change a culture?
Well, I have to say that the government, and particularly CMS, has lately helped us tremendously, because in the past, we really waited for hospitals to come to us who just had this altruistic bent, that they were innovators, they wanted to try something a little different, a little radical. And for a very long time, Plaintree was a very small membership organization of those, you know, those true innovators. What has happened over the last several years, which has just been a boon for patient-centered care and for patients and families, is Medicare and Medicaid have decided that it's important to be patient-centered, and they have put things in place that are now incentivizing hospitals to embrace a patient-centered approach to care. And in the way that they started this was with the patient satisfaction surveys. Most hospitals for many years now have been sending surveys out to their patients after their discharge, asking them, how satisfied were you with your stay? Were you in a clean, quiet environment? Did the doctor answer your questions? Was the nurse responsive when you pressed your call bell? How was the food? How, you know, how was the your room? So hospitals have been collecting this data for years, and they were using it internally to guide some of their improvement efforts. What CMS did recently was to say, we are going to standardize that survey. Everyone is going to use the same survey, and we're going to publicly report the data. So now consumers can go onto a website called Hospital Compare, and they can actually compare patients' experiences across all different hospitals in the region, in the state, in the country. So hospitals now have this public spotlight on the way that they're delivering care, the patient experience, not just the clinical, and we've been reporting on that for a long time, but the patient experience of care. The next step that CMS is taking with Medicare and Medicaid is to tie the hospital's financial reimbursement to their performance on their patient satisfaction surveys. So we've got the attention now of decision makers and leaders in the healthcare industry who now have money on the line if they don't pay attention to what their patients really want in the way care is delivered. So there is an amazing, unprecedented opportunity right now to make tremendous gains around the way care is delivered.
How do you see Plaintree transforming healthcare in this country?
Well, I think in some ways it already has. We're trying to really create changes in the system at a system level now, as opposed to just one hospital at a time, that can help to incentivize hospitals for adopting some of these practices. We work with the National Quality Forum and sit on the National Priorities Partnership Group, which helps to shape some of the strategic priorities for the nation's healthcare strategies. So we're dealing at a different level in many ways. But I do think still being able to tie patient satisfaction outcomes to improved clinical outcomes and getting that word out. We do a lot of public speaking about that, trying to get to groups of healthcare leaders, to physician leaders, to make that case, because I think there is a very sound business case as well as, I think, a very altruistic case of for patient-centered care. How would you want to be treated? How would you want your loved ones to be treated? When you ask people that question, they know that the answer is not necessarily the way that care is being delivered right now. So we keep pushing that message out there, trying to make people a little more thoughtful about the work that they do.
Dr. Susan Frampton, we want to thank you so much for talking with us on the People's Pharmacy today.
Thank you very much.
You've been listening to Dr. Susan Frampton, president of Plaintree, a network of hospitals and healthcare centers across the United States, Canada, and Europe. Her book is titled Putting Patients First.
We also heard from Bob Krause, chairman of Sacred Heart Hospital's board of directors in Eau Claire, Wisconsin. And we started the hour talking with Dr. Pamela Weibel, nationally recognized innovator in patient-centered care. She pioneered the community-designed ideal medical practice in which patients design their own clinics.
Lynn Siegel produced today's show. Peter Bombar is our technical production supervisor, and Al Wodarski helps engineer the program. Dave Graydon edits our interviews.
The People's Pharmacy theme music is by B.J. Lederman.
The People's Pharmacy is produced at the studios of North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC.
If you'd like to order a CD of today's show or any other People's Pharmacy broadcast, you can call 800-732-2334. Today's show is number 818. That number again, 800-732-2334. You can also place your order online. Go to peoplespharmacy.com.
And when you go to the website, you can find detailed information about prescription medications, herbs, and home remedies. You can vote on today's show, share your own story, or check out our new home remedy book from National Geographic. Sign up for a free electronic newsletter or subscribe to the free podcast of our show. It will be delivered straight to your computer, and you'll never miss another People's Pharmacy program again. It's all at www.peoplespharmacy.com. In Durham, North Carolina, I'm Joe Graydon.
And I'm Terry Graydon. Thanks so much for listening, and please join us again next week. We hope you've enjoyed this podcast of The People's Pharmacy. The podcast is brought to you in part by Red X Industries, makers of Utterly Smooth Foot Cream with Shea Butter, helping dry, cracked feet feel soft and smooth. The number is 800-345-7339. The website is uttercream.com.
This podcast was also brought to you in part by Lipronol, a potent natural anti-inflammatory with a unique combination of omega-3 fatty acids and no side effects, now available in the United States. More information is at LipronolUSA.com. That's spelled LYPRINOLUSA.com.